Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels. This is a show where we get together every couple of weeks and try to cover all of the video game industry news and topics, and try to get behind all of those news to understand what they mean and what they where they come from. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I am joined by Barry Ricks, very well known as the host of Sweet Kicks with Bricks, although you haven't done that in a while.
I had one show this week, and I try to get two shows every week, interviewing people from Kickstarter and stuff like that. So it's keeping me busy for sure.
And you also have The Closet Geek.
Yes, definitely. The Closet Geek is just a geeky review show that I do with my three older brothers, actually.
and I'm sure that always goes smoothly. Without any hitch, obviously.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of fun. We, being brothers that we have an interesting presence, and we joke around and we pick on each other and all that stuff. So it adds for some entertainment value every now and then.
Cool. Well, we have a bunch of news to discuss today. The first one is going to make Nintendo enthusiasts very excited because we're starting to hear about the next console by the Japanese manufacturer. Then we have a little bit of Sony PlayStation 4 talk with the price being cut in the US, and some Star Wars Battlefront news that obviously we can't get around. And then there's some SteamOS, Steam Machines, some virtual reality Resident Evil, and Square Enix doing Kickstarters. Things like Kickstarters, basically crowdfunding games, a bunch of stuff. Yes. But let's get started. I understand you're excited about the Square Enix crowdfunding, because Kickstarter is your thing. But
yeah, well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Kickstarter just because there's a lot of things that wouldn't have ever been made if it was never for Kickstarter. But it's interesting to see a lot of these larger companies now getting involved with it, like Square Enix being one of them. And then you have a lot of people that are bringing back old games that people have wanted to, see sequels to for a long time, and they're getting millions and millions of dollars from people funding it and everything. So it's really interesting to see everyone kind of jumping on the crowdfunding wagon there.
I think for Shenmue, we've discussed it a little bit, and I'm very worried about that game. But that Square Enix thing, you know what? Let's talk about it now. I had it way down in the lineup, but basically they're considering crowdfunding for games that have a big cult following in the West, but that have been developed for Japan and that they don't think would be able to make it in the West, so they wouldn't invest the funds to localize them. So this is just being considered right now. Apparently, it's not like it's going to happen for sure, but I don't have a problem with that idea. But I understand that some people might. Square Enix is a very large corporation, and having big names like that resort to crowdfunding feels a little bit very polite, counterintuitive.
It's kind of like, I'm this big large corporation, why do I need If exactly, I feel if I feel this is something that people want, why do I need to go through crowdfunding to do it if I feel it's what people want? And I've met a lot of people that they love the Japanese only release games that are only over there. You know, they buy the simulators or whatever they need to modify their current PlayStation and be able to play it on that. And so I know there's lots of people out there that play those games. So I can see where people are coming from when they say that, oh, well, you know, why do you need Kickstarter? You have enough money to just make the game if you think there's a market for it. So you should just do it. But
that's,
I don't know,
the thing. I think that's the thing. We're seeing this trend in Kickstarter that is not just for, you know, basically kickstarting a project as it was initially intended. There's also a lot of people, a lot of companies that are using it now to gauge interest for that product. And Shenmue is a prime example of that. I think there is, you know, Sony also has this system for hardware for things that they would like to get off the ground but aren't necessarily certain are going to work. People often don't realize how expensive localizing a game is. I think this as a way of gauging interest, because of course if you're going to be making a petition, then signing the thing doesn't make anyone involved. If you have to invest even a small amount, you know, $5-$10, I think it might be an interesting way of doing it. I'm not sure I'm completely against it. And as a fan of Japanese games that never make it to the West, we know that there are some that just will not get ported or won't get localized. So I think there is some interesting element in that approach. So I'm not ready to just condemn them.
Yeah, well, and it'll be interesting because, dealing with a lot of Kickstarter company, people that do Kickstarters for my show, is I always get a large range of, you know, feedback of how people handle, you know, backing a Kickstarter, because it's difference between backing like a video game versus a board game. When you back a tabletop board game, you usually get it within a few months' time, generally, depending on the scale of the game. But when you back a video game, I mean, you are backing the very earliest stages of a video game. And I don't think a lot of people realize that when they do that. And so there's some companies that I've interviewed like over a year ago or more, and their game's still not out, because I mean it takes a lot to make a video game, and I think people that back it are like, oh, it's been a year now, why don't I have my game yet?
we have a prime example of that with Star Citizen, which has raised to date like $82-83 million. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
But the game has become so ambitious that it's obviously going to take a lot of time to create that game. It's already been 3 years, and I don't think it's anywhere close to release.
Oh no, I mean, he just keeps adding more and more, like expanding the scope of what the game is. And so, yeah, when you add those things, it just adds more time.
Yeah. And even if you do know what you want to do for a video game, it's never just, all right, I have a plan, I'm going to do it like month by month, and it's going to be done in 10 months. When you do this kind of product, you iterate a lot, and you do things, and you see things that work and that don't work. And I think for Star Citizen specifically, there's an argument to be made that a lot of people did kickstart and did back a certain game, and they wanted that game. And with Chris Roberts keeping adding more and more stuff, that's not the game they want. They just want the game they backed initially and to be done with it. But yeah, there's a lot of controversy around Star Citizen at the moment. But
well, it's an interesting way of looking at it. It's just like, well, give me the base game and then maybe add like expansions to it later, type of thing. So.
All right, but for Japanese games that didn't make it to the West yet, I think the game is already made. And if it's just localization, I think that process might also be a little bit faster. So it might take a few months, maybe a year, depending on the nature of the game, if there's a lot of voiceover or voice acting and stuff like that. But it might be a little bit easier. So yeah, I personally, I like the idea.
I'm for it.
Yeah. The Wall Street Journal has a report on the Nintendo NX, which is the next console by Nintendo. And this is basically just things we already knew, kind of. But when the Wall Street Journal discusses them, it's not anything confirmed by any means, but it's certainly more serious and more validated than when it's just rumors flying around.
Yeah, it's a little bit more prestigious journalism than you know, your friend's blog,
exactly,
or something like that,
or some guy in a podcast saying, "I think it's gonna be this,"
exactly,
like I might have. So in this case, what we have, the pieces of information we have from the Wall Street Journal is that the hardware isn't finalized yet, probably not, but there are a couple of things. First of all, they're going to be having high-end hardware. I'm talking about the silicon here. The chips are going to be, basically, is going to have nice graphics, which is very different from the Wii and the Wii U, and Nintendo was very criticized for that. I think they could easily get a machine that would do PS4 or Xbox One level graphics for a very reasonable amount. Especially since it's been, those two consoles have been out for 2 years now. It's going to be 3 years once the NX comes out. They are also saying that, basically confirming that it is very probably going to be coming with a base unit and a portable unit that can be used in the living room with your console or when you're out and about. Basically, that hybrid theory of a portable console and a home console mixed into one somehow.
And so it's kind of like the Vita with the PlayStation 4, how you could switch back and forth type of situation.
It's hard to say, but maybe, you know, maybe there's going to be elements of that. Maybe there's going to be elements of a Wii U type thing where you can use the portable portion as a gamepad with added functionality. Or if you could take that gamepad out of the room and it would function individually like a, you know, a 3DS or a Game Boy would. So I think this is an interesting idea. It would need to have games that work, you know, just on the TV or on both screens, or, you know, there could be multiple modes for games and different games that use them in different ways. So that would be something that we're still not completely sure about how it would work, especially since, honestly, there are very few games that take advantage of the Wii U gamepad. But the one interesting piece of information that I thought was the most interesting is that the estimation of the Wall Street Journal is that the console would come out in 2016, so very likely for the holiday season 2016. There are a few other tidbits. There's a studio called Monolith that developed Xenoblade Chronicles and Chronicles X, which is recruiting very urgently, and they have been known to have helped Nintendo with titles like Animal Crossing and some Zelda titles. So they are working in very close relationship with Nintendo. So, and I think Nintendo really can't afford to have the completely barren landscape for more than a year. There's Firefox, Star Fox that's going to come out. And yeah, go ahead, Barry.
Well, it's exactly the point. I mean, they brought out the Wii U and they didn't have any of their like major titles come out with the Wii U when it first came out, and we still don't even have like a Zelda game for the Wii U. And, you know, that's in my mind, like, you know, with Nintendo, you have, you know, you should have a Mario game, you should have a Zelda game, maybe like a Metroid game or something. You know, have your big guns have a release with, you know, your system, and that will, you know, boost the sales definitely. But it's kind of weird that we still haven't seen that from Nintendo. Of course we do have Mario now and its various
Smash Bros, there's Mario Kart, there's 3D World, there's New Super Mario Bros. Wii U. There are a few, but definitely I think at this point you know, they've only sold 10 million, which 3 years into the cycle is way not enough. It's the worst performing console they've ever put out, and some of them have been performing really badly already. I think they're basically writing off
Are they just kind of sweep it under the carpet when the next one be like, forget that the Wii U ever existed and focus on, you know, the NX when it comes out?
That is something that seems very likely. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some level of backwards compatibility with the Wii U once the NX comes out. But I think the thing that is very likely to happen is that Zelda is going to come out on, you know, something we've mentioned a few times on the show. It's going to come out both on Wii U and on the NX, and that's one of the reasons why they've pushed Zelda away from 2015.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what they did with Twilight Princess when it came out, you know. So I think that would be very smart for Nintendo to do, for sure. But
they can't put out a Zelda game on a system like the Wii U that is basically, they could sell, you know, 2-3 more millions, but it wouldn't bring it out of the pit that it's in anyway. So there's no way they're just gonna put it out on Wii U. So
are they thinking they're gonna keep it calling the NX though?
I don't think so.
Is that still code name?
No, I think it's code name. It's going to come out Nintendo.
That would be a lame name, in my opinion.
Well, I like, you know, Nintendo Next or something, maybe.
Yeah, I guess that would be what, you know, they would like be going for.
The N would be the one in the living room, and the X would be the one you can take away with you, or... We'll
see.
There
you go.
But my prediction is holiday season 2016, very likely. Latest is March 2017. Very latest, because they still have to be in the fiscal year, you know, and that ends end of March. So I'm certain it's going to come out by March 2017.
So do you think Nintendo will actually have a panel and a big presentation at E3 this year rather than their internet thing that they've been doing
Direct?
So it's just like I think they need to kind of like go big this year and have, you know, their Sony and Microsoft level of presentation, but for Nintendo, and be like, here's the new system, guys, and it's gonna be awesome.
That's a good question. I'm wondering if they would do, even if they do a press conference or a keynote or, you know, a presentation, I think it would be relatively low key, because they're always, you know, the most humble of the three. I don't see, a big musical act or anything like that, but it would be definitely very interesting to see if they were doing something there. I think they will. I think a Nintendo Direct would be a little bit underwhelming for everyone. You need to have people there cheering and, you know, clapping.
Yeah.
And people love Nintendo. People want to cheer for Nintendo. They just need a reason to do that. And recently, unfortunately, we haven't had that many valid reasons to be happy for Nintendo's efforts. So I could absolutely see them doing a presentation on stage with all that implies.
I agree.
Sony is cutting the price of the PS4 in the US. They did that a few weeks ago in Japan, and now they've transferred over that price cut in the US. It's $349 right now. It's joining the Xbox One at that price. I think it couldn't stay more expensive, significantly more expensive, for too much longer, especially in the US, where the competition of the Xbox One is a lot more present. In Japan, the Xbox One is basically non-existent.
as it usually is. So.
Yeah, exactly. But this time, it's even worse. I mean, even the PS4 has had trouble selling, because there's just no convincing, compelling titles for the Japanese audience. But the Xbox One is like, it's selling in the, you know, low three figures sometimes, some weeks, which is, can you imagine, like, you're Microsoft and you have the Xbox One and it's selling 150 consoles in the entire country in 1 week in Japan.
No, that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, because the, you know, Microsoft, they finally like came out, and said, okay, we realize that Sony's, you know, kicking our booties in this area, but we have some great things coming out type of thing. So it's interesting that the president came out and it's just like, okay, we understand that we're behind in the race, but that doesn't mean we're out of the race. So
here's
some things to look forward to.
Yeah, he did kind of say, I think he mentioned something along the lines of, I'm not sure we can catch up to Sony for this generation. Yeah. It was Phil Spencer giving an interview. So he's kind of admitting that they might be out of the race from a numbers standpoint. I do think that they have an excellent offering for the coming 18 months or so. It is definitely a good console. So
they'll get some boosts in their sales for sure when Halo 5 comes out. So
yeah, we're not even a month away. So I'm not sure it will be boosted, but in Europe, for example, the PlayStation is dominating the Xbox One like to an incredible degree. It's like 2/3 of the market is PlayStation 4 as opposed to Xbox One. So it begs the question, will they lower the price of the PlayStation 4 in Europe as well? And I do think they are going to. They have a lot less to worry about here, but it's been 2 years. And now you're getting into, just grandma going to, maybe not grandma, but some person who is not...
Have a Black Friday sale here, after Thanksgiving, drop it down a little bit further and mom and dad are picking up the PlayStation 4 because their kid's been bothering them for 2 years to get one.
Exactly. Or, some student who's had a PlayStation 3 for a long time and they didn't want to purchase the next console immediately because it was a little bit too expensive and the PS3 was still very valid. Now, if they're going to go to the store and there's the Xbox One that's $50 cheaper on one side and the PS4, they're going to think, well, you know what, there's Halo 5 and there's this, I'm going to get this one. Whereas for the PlayStation 4, the titles are not out quite yet, but they're going to be out, Q1. And if it's the same price, it might be convincing for people. So I think they have to, but we'll see. We have the Paris Games Week show in about 10 days, a week or 10 days. And they have a big press conference there. So I think they're going to announce it there. But we'll see. We might also have a release date for No Man's Sky there, but there's a rumor, but might not happen.
That'd be interesting if they finally do that. So
yeah, everyone's eagerly waiting.
Yes, everyone's been waiting for that. They're like, just get to it already. Yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront beta was 10 days ago or so.
Yeah, it was a little over a week.
So I got a chance to play it for a few hours, and so did 9 million other people. That's a pretty successful beta. It's not very surprising. I mean, Battlefront is definitely one of the most expected games of the year with the Star Wars fever happening, and it seems EA is intent on cashing in on that fever with a $50 season pass, which will add new modes and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be content, but $50 for the season pass is pretty expensive.
It's like buying a second game. And yeah. I mean, I guess it depends. Like they stated that there's basically going to be kind of like four different expansions within the season pass. And so, I mean, if they have the level of content within those four expansions to what would be a game, I guess you could, charge that much. But yeah, it seems a little pricey to, I bought this game for $60 and now I need to buy another, spend another $50 right away just to, get some more content. I mean, a lot of the hardcore gamers, that will probably get in on that. But us little people over here will be like, yeah, maybe not. Maybe I'll wait for a while.
Actually, that's an interesting question, because a lot of the feedback that we've heard from the beta was it's fun, but it's very easy. It's a very casual game, and it doesn't have the staying power to keep the hardcore, Battlefront. the game that DICE does. Thank you, Battlefield. Type of player is interested for a really long time. I mean, it was just two multiplayer modes. One was a very simple, you know, relatively low number of objectives mode, and the other one was the full-on Battle of Hoth with the Imperial, you know, AT-ATs, and there were AT-STs and A-wings and X-wings and interceptors, and you know, it was it really felt like you were in the middle of the Battle of Hoth. It was an absolute, I mean, the game itself is very accessible, and it puts you in a mood, in a setting that is incredibly well-crafted and well-designed. And I think that's the biggest achievement that DICE has managed to do with this game. It's make you feel like you are a pawn in that battle, and you're really living through that whole thing. So I think for a lot of more casual players, they will be very happy to play that game. For a lot of the, you know, hardcore players are saying, well, you know, I can play 5, 10, 15 hours, but it won't keep me longer than that. But thinking about it, a lot of single player experiences last about that or even less than that. And we're happy to put $50 into it. So I think this is a possibly, how to put it? I'm not sure I'm going to be willing to put out to pay $60 for it, but I'm sure that game is going to be $10, $15 cheaper on Amazon a week after it's released. And yeah, by then, it might be worth it. The game is gorgeous, so beautiful. Obviously, we don't have Andor, the map on Andor, which was so pretty, unbelievably pretty in the trailers, so we haven't seen that. But I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. And it plays well. It's very easy. It's very clever in the things it does. For example, when you shoot machine gun thing, you just shoot lasers and they feel like they have impact. They feel good, but they basically overheat, so you can keep shooting for 30 seconds or 20 seconds and they overheat, and then you have to wait for it to cool down. You can make it cool down faster if you press the button at the right time, but what that means is that you don't have to reload. Same for the grenade. You can use it once every 7 seconds and you don't run out of them. Same for the sniper rifle, same for the jetpack that boosts you to jump really far. It feels really great. So okay, it's easily, very easily accessible. Sometimes you know, there were a couple of concerns. You would die as soon as you would spawn because you don't understand what's happening, and it was a little bit one-sided. The Empire was way too strong in the Hoth map, but they're gonna address that. So I think for the target that it's targeting, it is very well crafted. I think so it's gonna succeed in that way.
So it's more for the casual first-person shooter rather than the hardcore first-person shooter.
I think,
I could get behind that because, I mean, there's so many games out there now that are so demanding of your time that it feels like I am that casual gamer that they are going towards, because, you know, I'm like, well, I could play this game or this game or this. There's so much out there. It's kind of, it's hard to dedicate yourself to just one thing. But knowing that, it's just like, oh, well, I don't have to worry about, you know, purchasing items or, you know, using heavy strategy on, you know, just saving my grenades if they're always there for me type of thing. And so I can see, like, for the hardcore gamers, they're like, oh, well, this isn't, you know, Counter-Strike and this isn't Battlefront and all those things. That's cool, you know, but, you know, for someone that's just like, oh, I haven't played video games in like a week or two because I've been busy with work or family or something. And then you jump on and then it's, you know, to that level of casualness that you could still enjoy it rather than, oh, I've been gone for 2 weeks and I jump on there and, oh, I don't like playing this game because everyone's, you know, destroying me right when I spawn. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see the lessons they've learned and the info they got on their beta, and then continue on from there.
I think you're exactly right. This is a game that is not aimed at people who spend 10 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours a week playing like people who play Battlefield possibly do. You know, the most engaged players probably spend a lot of time doing that. And as someone who has recently dedicated their entire life to Destiny, I've basically pledged my soul
your Oryx. Fealty to Destiny.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. My Oryx has my soul now. I can't, you know, but it's the game that Battlefront game is absolutely aimed squarely at people who are excited about Star Wars with the sequel and who want to be into that universe more with and who like video games. And it's people that might play easy-ish single-player games usually and who just want to play that thing. And it's totally aimed at them. They're not the kind of people that are gonna go in and learn the intricacies of a Battlefield map and, you know, the objectives that you need to do. Here, it's relatively easy to get the hang of. It's a little bit confusing when you wanted to go for the objective, but it doesn't matter all that much. Just go to the blinking thing that is blinking and you just try to shoot stuff, right? So
that's right.
I think it's going to be successful in that sense. And maybe, you know, it's going to come out in 2 weeks. Then you have the movie that's coming out a month later. People are going to be excited about this as well. I would have loved to have a single player experience. There is one, but it's really just, you know, specific maps with bots who take you through a series of objectives. So the single/co-op experience is not anything to speak of, but if they had to make a full-on single-player experience, like a campaign-type thing, it would have been so much more work. It's an entirely different endeavor. So I understand that's not what they wanted to do. They didn't want to have the work involved in all of this. And honestly, they're going to be making lots of money with this anyway. So I think they didn't want to spend the story writing and the character voice acting and acting and like all of the different systems and the leveling and they didn't want to bother with that. And they're going to be making lots of money with this anyway. So
no, it's good because I mean, they took a first person shooter genre that's, you know, has its very hardcore gamers, but then they're like, okay, let's get some of the casual gamers into this area, you know, kind of like what Blizzard did with Heroes of the Storm, where, you know, you had your really hardcore League of Legends and your Dota 2 fans, and then they're like, oh, well, let's make something similar, but to a level where someone that maybe was gone for a week or two can still jump on and still enjoy playing a MOBA. And so I felt that they were very, very successful with Heroes for sure.
I think there's an interesting question there, which is Heroes, like other Blizzard games do, can still be deep if you want to get into it. It's definitely relatively accessible, but it can become very strategically not complicated. Well, yeah, complicated if you want it to be. I think a lot of the criticism that a lot of people are doing for Star Wars, and keep in mind, you know, this is just the initial beta with just a couple of maps. So there are going to be five additional game modes, you know, five additional objectives in the game. So it might change. But the criticism that people are making is that the deepness is not there in Battlefront. And that's what was disappointing to a lot of people. So we'll have to see how it works out. I mean, DICE knows what they're doing, but we don't know if they just wanted to make a casual game and that's it, or if they also included another layer in that Battlefront game that will keep the most dedicated players playing for, you know, months and months to come. And if they don't, which is the impression that the people had in that first beta, it raises the question of that season pass, because if people don't stay for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, is it going to be interesting for people to buy that season pass? That's the big question. A lot of people are saying this is basically going to be a case of, what's that name? The mech game from Respawn Entertainment. Titanfall. There you go.
Oh, Titanfall. Yes.
Where people played for a week or two and then the servers were deserted.
I haven't heard anything about Titanfall in like the last year.
Yeah, exactly. It's fun. I think they well, let's not go over a discussion on Titanfall, but I loved it for 10 hours. Basically, that's the lesson for Titanfall. But we'll see. Battlefront is exciting just because it is Star Wars. So
it's Star Wars, of course. Yeah. This is the Star Wars year. I mean, I went to Walmart the other day, and they have... It's insane the marketing that Disney is doing with Star Wars now. There's Star Wars everything. Yeah. You know, like no matter what aisle you go to, whether it's a food aisle, a toy aisle, clothing aisle, or whatever, there's Star Wars everywhere. And I'm just like, holy cow, we'll get this huge oversaturation of Star Wars. But, you know, it's what people want. It's really, you know, this is the year of Star Wars. And so it'd be pretty exciting when the movie comes out.
Yeah. I'm wondering if Star Wars is going to be, you know, it's going to depend on the movie. If the movie's good, the hype is not going to die. If the movie is not good, then people are going to get sick of it pretty quickly. But,
well, yeah, I guess you'll know before us over here in the States, since you're three days.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's
It's not fair.
I'm not sure I'm going to be able to score a ticket, though. It's going to be difficult to actually get a ticket for the, you know, first couple of days. Maybe I'll go in the morning. You know, I'll remove one of my podcast recording slots and just go to Star Wars instead.
That's right. And then you could do a review and be like, I did this for you guys.
Everything I do is for you guys.
That's right.
All right, let's move on to Steam. The Steam OS and Steam Machines and Steam Link and Steam Controllers have been delivered.
Steam everything.
Steam everywhere. It's like Star Wars everywhere.
That's right.
They have been delivered to the people who pre-ordered, and we've also had a few first impression reports from a couple of publications. And I think there are a couple of directions that people are going. The Verge is basically saying, this is kind of cool, and the Steam Link is really all you need for your TV to become a PC console. And the Steam machines are, yeah, okay, but the Steam Link is really cool. Ars Technica is a little bit more iffy on the whole thing. They're saying that the devices work, but the Steam machines are really expensive. You have the Steam Link, which works, you know, not as well as you would like it to work. The controller is good, but not perfect, etc., etc. So and there's one thing that I noticed as well, if I can find it again, the hardware power. They didn't manage to do some super in-depth testing, but they found that for some games they tested with Shadow of Mordor, and they got some pretty disappointing numbers with the Steam machine. They got for Shadow of Mordor 34 FPS or 35 FPS on lowest settings. And it's with the Alienware Steam machine. I don't know which model, but on the Ultra setting, they only got like 6 or 7 frames per second. And the PlayStation 4 is able to run it at 30 frames per second, more or less, which corresponds to somewhere between medium and high on the PC version. It's the consoles, which obviously are, you know, less expensive because the manufacturers can take a loss on the consoles because they're going to be making money on the software. And in the case of the Steam machine, Alienware is selling it for $750 for that machine we're talking about. Yeah. And they have to sell it a little bit more expensive, a little bit more expensively, because they can't make enough money on the whole thing. They have to make money, and they can't make money on the resulting software sales. And that is a system that is an i7, 8 gigs of RAM, and the NVIDIA GTX. It's a 860M class, more or less. So And on top of that, you need to you will only get the games that are Linux compatible, because the Steam machine doesn't run Windows, it runs Linux. So the Steam games that are Linux compatible are the only ones that you're going to be able to get for that device.
It's kind of weird to me. It's just like, is this something that the people really wanted? I mean, did people want Steam to come and try to break into the console war? I mean, it's just like, in my mind, PC gaming is like I go and I sit down and I get in front of my computer and I want to play the games on my computer, because the situation might be different for myself, because I have a house full of kids and stuff like that, so they have the TV when they're playing their games, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll go play my games on, and this has never appealed to me, and I just thought it was kind of weird. I'm like, was this something high in demand, or it's just kind of odd?
Yeah, I think bewilderment is the reaction of a lot of people for that Steam machine in general. It's kind of a device without a clear reason for being, but a couple of things. I think there are some people that would like to play their PC games on their TV, and I'm one of them. And I think in this case, the link that's $50 is a good solution if it works well.
Yeah, the better route for it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to pay another $600 and or $700 and or $800 dollars machine if you can just get. Yes, it's not going to be perfect, and you need to use it with a wired connection if you want to have some, the best performance out of it, but it's $50. So it's probably better for most uses. But the other thing, I think we're coming back to the roots of this whole thing. I think it was Gabe Newell who saw Windows 8 come out with its Windows Store, who was not terrified, but he was thinking, holy crap, they're coming to eat our lunch. If the Windows Store becomes a prevalent way for people to get their games, we're in trouble. Steam might be losing Steam. I think that was a reaction to that. He was very much trying to make sure that he didn't get caught with his pants down, and he kickstarted another ecosystem where they could master everything. And in the meantime, Microsoft has changed a lot. They've taken a beating with Windows 8, and they've decided that they were going to go a different route with Windows 10, and they were not going to try and do everything. They were going to try and focus a little bit more, and they have been extremely supportive of gaming on Windows 10 for third parties. They've made many gestures towards Valve many times in the past couple of years. So I think that crisis that prompted Valve to push the Steam machines and the Steam OS 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the context is different now. And Valve don't need it as much anymore. So, of course, they're still going to be doing it because they said they would, and it would be ridiculous if they didn't. But I think it's a much less important venture for them now. It's good to have, but I don't think it's as important as it was when they first announced it, and there was the danger of Windows 10 overtaking them potentially in some far-flung future than it is now.
Definitely.
I think I might pick up a Steam Link just to, a Steam Link and a Steam controller. We'll see. They come out for everyone on November 10. It's only pre-orders that were delivered now. So I might pick up a Steam Link and just use it for my, because it is enjoyable to be on your TV. And if it works well, I have my PC running in some corner of the house, and the games that come out on PC usually a lot cheaper, especially during sales. If it works well enough, and it seems to be, well thought out, it can be a good way of having all of those games on the TV with the comfort of the couch and the lean back experience. So, might do that.
I'll be excited to hear what your thoughts are on it. So
I will see. I'm going to wait a little bit. There are way too many games coming out this holiday season, but
I know,
maybe next year.
Once again, lots of things demanding our eyeballs.
Yeah, exactly. And don't forget the god Oryx that demands my soul and my attention. Resident Evil, we haven't heard about a new title in a while, or an original title. It seems the team is currently looking at virtual reality. The team behind Resident Evil might be looking at virtual reality for their next project. Is it going to be a VR Resident Evil? We don't know. But I would definitely be... I mean, Resident Evil is very hit and miss. They've had some excellent titles. They've had some examples of titles where they were really behind the times mechanically for gameplay. But still, obviously, for a company like Capcom and a team like the Resident Evil team, if they're looking at virtual reality, I would be very curious to see what comes out of it.
Yeah, so. I mean, if it's not a Resident Evil game, it will most likely be in the area of a horror thriller type game, I'm sure. So, because that'd be something that a lot of people, I think, would get behind is playing that game where you have things jumping at you in virtual reality and, get that little scare factor going.
It would be terrifying.
I know. I'm like, I don't know if I would want to do that, but there's lots of people that are really into that. So I think they would probably go for that. Sure. I mean, you could get pretty psyched out and scared from just playing games in the dark on your computer or something. But imagine having that right, in your face and, it feels real. That'd be hopefully no one has a heart attack or anything.
I think they could not put a game out that would be in that vein that wouldn't be a Resident Evil game, especially with Capcom, having the spin-off fever with all of their titles and all of their franchises. I don't see that game not being a Resident Evil game if it ever comes out. But I'm not sure I would want to play it, but we'll see. There's a new gameplay trailer, or actually just 9 minutes of gameplay for Adrift. Do you know what Adrift is?
I don't.
It's basically Gravity the game.
Okay.
You remember that movie with what's her face?
Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
There you go. It's basically someone who's in a space station and something goes wrong, and you are in that space station and you have to do stuff. And that gameplay, those 10 minutes of gameplay are, it's hard to describe. There's no music, just the sound of you breathing, and you're in obviously zero gravity, and you're moving from portion to the of the space station, and then going out in space, and you need to replenish your oxygen levels every once in a while, and it is really captivating. I think this is a game I will be very curious to try. I don't know how long they can keep that up. I would think that game would probably be a couple of hours experience. It seems like it would be better served as a narrative thing, more like Gone Home or those types of games. It's going to come out in 2016 for Xbox One, PS4, of course, and Oculus. So 2016.
I agree with you, though. It can't be longer than, like, let's say that the movie Gravity was, because I mean, surprisingly, that movie could be very intense and very moving with just the amount of silence that was involved. But playing a video game is different than watching a movie. So, it's got to be a shorter game for sure, just to give you that experience. I can't imagine playing 10 hours of a game like that or anything. So that'll be it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, for sure. Especially since it doesn't seem to have a lot of hard gameplay elements. It's a lot of drifting around and going to one place and finding an oxygen capsule and, you know, that kind of thing. It doesn't really involve any shooting or there might be some puzzle solving, but it's not very involved active gameplay. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a shorter type of experience. Far Cry, the next Far Cry was announced. It's called Far Cry Primal. It's going to be released in 2016, and it is not a modern guerrilla type island where you have to go and take out bases and stuff like that. It's set in the Stone Age, and yeah. I thought that's an interesting take.
It's something different, and so I like that. I'm for that for sure. It's a different take on, you know, I'm sure we'll get a lot of the similar gameplay for sure, but just a different world to do it in.
Yeah, I think, you know, Far Cry 1 and 2 were a specific type of game. 3 and 4 specifically, you know, when Ubisoft got the franchise back, they perfected the formula, especially 4 improved on 3. It was still very good, but I think if they had made yet another one that is exactly like that and you're going in, I don't know, some southeastern Asia, or, you know, some developing country and doing the same thing again, it would have been the one episode too many. So it's really interesting that they're taking this route, and maybe they're going to introduce some new gameplay elements, because it doesn't seem, for example, you have guns that you're shooting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so, you have your bow and your spear hunting some mammoths down.
Exactly, yeah. And it's actually like, if they manage to there was a little bit of a feeling of Horizon Zero Dawn, that PS4 exclusive, yeah.
Which that game looks fantastic too, yeah. So that'll be interesting. But with that game, that one's more of like a post-apocalyptic game, where this one is like, you know, the beginning of mankind. And yeah, you'll have similar elements, but slight differences as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Horizon Zero Dawn is, they coined the phrase post-apocalyptic, so it's like we're restarting from zero. Obviously it's not going to be the same thing, but hunting down a mammoth with a bow and a spear is going to be an interesting experience. So I wonder how they're going to make it work and how they're going to adapt the Far Cry formula. But I think that's really good on them for not recycling the same type of thing again.
No, I totally agree.
Blizzard's Overwatch is going into beta on October 27 in a week.
Yes. Finally. So excited. I know. Oh man, when they announced that, I was just like, I was expecting them to wait until BlizzCon to release their beta. Well, and granted, it's a closed beta, so you won't be able to get in there unless you get that oh so special email. And so make sure you sign up for it. No, I'm so excited for this game. And once again, it's kind of like that aspect of taking a first-person shooter genre, but like adding elements, making it a little bit more simpler than, like, let's say Counter-Strike is, or with the aspect of, it doesn't seem like there's going to be like, you know, you're not going to be like leveling up, or you're not going to be buying a lot of items or anything. It seems like, here's your character, they have these three abilities, and they use this weapon, and that's it, go for it, type of thing. And I love that, because it's just like, here's the simple aspect of it, but, you know, the idea is finding the perfect team composition and working together and playing off each other's abilities, and I'm super stoked for this game.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, the beta is going to be closed, and they're going to invite a very limited number of people, I think, for the general beta. And I'm really hoping I can get in. I'm not sure, even though I did work for the company, I'm not sure I can get in. But
you'll get an email, I'm sure.
For the first wave, I'm not certain, honestly. But we'll see. And then they're going to have some much larger weekends where they're going to invite a lot of people over, you know, for a couple of days every once in a while. So definitely sign up if you haven't signed up already, because I think they might have, you know, sometime after BlizzCon, one of those stress test weekends where they test the infrastructure. So we'll see how that works out. Another thing that I really enjoyed, they did a 2 hours live stream for the announcement of the beta, and there were a couple of elements that really showed that they're catering to, just like you're saying, to people who aren't necessarily used to playing FPSs or competitive FPSs, at least like this one. And one of the things that I really liked was the inclusion of tips to tell you what you're doing wrong or what you could be doing better without you having to scour the internet or watch videos. Or it's just silly little things that make a lot of sense when you're dying and you don't understand why. For example, it's things like, you know, it's a little tip that appears when you die. It says, the first step to defeating Bastion is figuring out where he is deployed, you know? Just actually understanding where that enemy is something you might not really think about when you're in the middle of the whole battle and just dying repeatedly without understanding why. Another one is move erratically to make it more difficult for Pharah to hit you with her rocket launcher. Another thing that is not obvious for people who haven't played those types of games a lot. Yeah, there's a ton of those tips that hopefully are displayed when they apply to the way you died or to your gameplay situation. So I'm hoping this is going to be one of the things that they do to make it easier for people to get into it.
Well, definitely. And it makes it more enjoyable too, because you're like, okay, well, that makes sense. Now I'll try that. And if you do it and you succeed, you'd be like, oh, well, thanks Blizzard for the nice tip.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully it will help people get into it. The second Street Fighter beta is going to start on the 22nd. It's going to end on the 25th. And it's going to include Rashid, Nekali, Ken, Vega, and Rainbow Mika, and Karen. There's not going to be Zangief or Laura, and the characters from the first beta are not going to be available. But if you want to try it out, if you were in the first beta, you're invited into the second beta already, so no worries there. But if you want to get into Street Fighter V, you can go and sign up for the beta. There are different ways of doing that for different regions. But yeah, it's going to start in a few days. So if you want to try it out, you can probably get an invite. The first wave was pretty easy to get into. I think most people who got invited got who signed up actually got into it. Now, of course, we couldn't play at the time, but that was another issue because they messed up the environment. But that's, you know, what betas are for. So hopefully the second one will go better.
It's all to work out the kinks.
And finally, I am not a Ratchet and Clank player, but if you are...
Okay. But I am, so...
All right, so tell us about this piece of news.
I'm super excited for this because, one, I do enjoy the Ratchet & Clank franchise, and they are making, or have made, I should say, a full-length feature, but it's an animated feature. It's not like they try to make it live action or anything, and it's set to come out next April in 2016, and it's kind of like the origin story of Ratchet and Clank, that they're going, you know, showing how, you know, Ratchet wants to, you know, become a space ranger and save the galaxy. And he meets his little robot friend and works with a, you know, Quark and all these things. And it just looks like a lot of fun. And I really enjoy it. And it felt like it had the same feel as the video game, which is nice. And my son and I really enjoy playing that game. But something that I thought was really cool about the movie is that they are keeping the original voice actors for like Ratchet and Clank and Commander Quark. So original voice actors from the game. So when you go see the movie, it's not like, oh, that doesn't sound like them, because it's going to be them. And that's really awesome. Of course, they do have, you know, big name Hollywood actors that are being the other characters that will kind of be the drawing factor. And it was kind of sad a little in a way, because during the trailer, they're like, you know, they list all these big Hollywood actors that are going to be voicing characters, but they never really mention, like, oh, the voice of, you know, of Ratchet is this person, because, you know, it, in a marketing standpoint, they're not really going to mention his name, because general public's not going to know who those right. voice actors are.
Right.
But I felt sort of sad for them, though. It's like, oh, well, you're not really getting any recognition for being the lead voice actor in this movie. But so I don't know. Maybe after this, they'll branch out into Hollywood and be in some other stuff. But I thought that was really cool. And for those people that are not familiar with the Ratchet and Clank, it's a, you know, it's a wonderful platformer game where you play this character, and it's all about using crazy different types of weapons. You have like usually like a dozen different types of weapons that you can use, from, you know, your classic blaster to a weapon that turns your enemies into sheep. And, you know, it's stuff like that. And it's lots of fun. And so if you enjoy a good platformer game, this is Ratchet and Clank is always one of those go-tos you could go to enjoy that. But it's interesting because, you know, the video game industry is always trying to get their fingers into Hollywood and to make movies. And of course, we've seen the really, really bad movies made from games, and then the ones that are, you know, weren't terrible but were okay. You know, you go from the really terrible ones, like the original Mario Brothers movie, which is a, you know, kind of a, it's a funny movie to watch, and then you have the Lara Croft movies, which were not that great, but then you had like the Prince of Persia movie, which was actually not that bad and it was enjoyable. But now they're trying, you know, okay, let's do an animated movie. And then, you know, and then you have all the rumors of, like, you know, Uncharted being made into a movie. And then you have Warcraft coming out next year. And
yeah, I think it's really getting
interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, I think, well, I don't know about Ratchet and Clank. It seemed, honestly, for me, I don't know the games. I've never played a Ratchet and Clank. I'm sorry. It wasn't my thing.
That's okay.
But I'm reacting to the audience.
There you go.
But
how dare the trailer, not play Ratchet?
There
and
you
Clank.
Go. That's what I meant. But the trailer felt a little bit formulaic. It did feel like a very it felt like an animated feature from a company that wasn't Pixar, that wasn't very inspired. It was a lot of the things that you would expect, like, oh, look at this fuzzy guy who wants to be a ranger, and he's getting rejected, but he has heart, yeah. So he's gonna be a kid. And then
it's a very,
you know,
very typical storyline where you
exactly.
have the hero of the show that's a nobody, but he wants to be a somebody, and because of circumstances, yeah. he's thrown into this, you know, it's kind of like,
yeah.
it's kind of like Star Wars, where Luke Skywalker was nobody.
Well, it's,
but now
I mean,
he became somebody.
I don't think the story itself is what bothers me so much. It's more of the way it's written. I don't know. It feels like it ticks all the boxes of what a Hollywood animated feature should be, with the funny moments and the yeah. I don't know. It maybe it's going to be fun. I don't think it's going to be not even exceptional. I don't think it's going to be a good, you know, movie to go watch with your kids, but it's not going to rise to the level of,
yeah, I don't think it's going to be, it's will not be a blockbuster, you know, big yeah. making money making machine. But I think maybe it will be good exposure for the gaming industry.
Yeah. Which
be like,
is
this is
that,
based
yeah.
off of a video game, and yeah. now parents go buy it for your kids type of thing. I think that's maybe what it's to create greater awareness and greater reach for the franchise, rather than saying, hey, this movie is going to be better than, you know, going to make more money than you know, the new Pixar movie. Well, that's just not going to be, that's not going to happen. That's not going to be the case.
For sure.
But to build it up, and I can definitely see possible, you know, hikes in Ratchet and Clank video game sales after the movie comes out. So,
well, yeah, especially since there's, you know, the new game coming out at the same time. So
exactly. And that's, you know, good marketing right there. Yeah. Be like, expose them to the movie. And then the kids are like, there's a video game for this. I want to play it. Mommy, let's go buy it right now.
Or they're going to be like, yeah, whatever. I want to play, you know, Marvel, what, something.
Exactly.
Actually,
yeah. And that,
yeah. Anyway, they're coming out April 26th next year. So,
yes,
I'm sure Barry will go and queue up for his to be first in the theater for Ratchet and Clank.
That's right. I will be there with my son and my wife, and we'll have a good time.
All right. Well, that's going to be it for the show today. Thank you so much for being with us, Mr. Ricks.
Well, thank you. It was awesome. Lots of fun and a great honor to be on the show.
Where can people find you if they want more?
Yes, definitely. So one of the best places to find more stuff that I do is theclosetgeek.net, where I post all of my podcasts that I do. So like Patrick said, I have The Closet Geek, which is the general geeky news show that I do with my three older brothers. So it's lots of fun. And I have Sweet Kicks with Bricks, which is I interview gaming developers and designers, whether they're tabletop games or video games, getting their games funded on Kickstarter. And for those people that are interested, I actually do a third podcast with my wife, and where it's a parenting podcast. So we talk about being parents and it's, you know, we talk about marriage as well. And so that's kind of fun. But you could go there, so theclosetgeek.net, or you could just reach out to me on Twitter at Bricks, that's like the actual brick, BRICKS, and 2312. So Bricks 2312.
Excellent. The link to your Twitter will be in the show notes, so you can find it there.
Yeah.
And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook. It's easy to remember. It's Patrick with a not in front of it. And you can also find the notes for this show on frenchspin.com. That's where I host the shows I produce. You will also find the Phileas Club over there, which is a show where we get people from different countries to get together and tell us how they saw the news from the past month. That's usually what we do. But a few days ago, we recorded a special episode with Turkey from Saudi Arabia, where we kind of explore the everyday life of people in his country. And I think that's a really interesting experiment that we're doing. The aim is to get people sort of a snapshot of what it is to spend a day in Riyadh, the capital of the country. And I think we did an okay job at that. So, if you're curious about this, and if you're, you know, you've never heard about how people actually do things in real life in Saudi Arabia and not just what you see on the news, that's something you might want to go and check out. That's on frenchspin.com, which is the site where I host my shows. And you'll find, as I said, this one over there as well. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. And we will be back in a couple of weeks with news from the Sony conference at the Paris Games Week. Should be exciting, hopefully. We'll see. See you in 2 weeks. Bye.